Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. As the first snows fall, weekend warriors from all over New England will pack up the car, strap the skis to the roof, and hit the slopes for a fairly expensive getaway. But in some places, skiing is a strategy for staying alive. Mark Jenkins, a contributing writer for National Geographic, traveled to the northernmost fringe of Western China, where skiing was invented many millennia ago. He spoke with the people who carry on the earliest skiing traditions, using the same resources and methods as their ancestors. Mark Jenkins' article is called On the Trail with the First Skiers and joins us now on the line. Mark, great to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Where the first skiers came from is a matter of some debate. So could you fill us in first on that discussion and competing evidence of first humans on skis?
Sure. Well, it all comes from snowy countries, as you would expect. The competitors are Norway, Finland, Sweden, Russia, and China. And China is the most recent to start to claim that they were the first to ski. They have now found petroglyphs of skiers chasing ibex in northern Altai in China that date to 3,000 to 5,000 years old. But of course, the Russians have found an actual ski tip that is 8,000 years old. So there's kind of a bit of a battle of who was the first to ski. My sense of it is that it might have been a simultaneous adventure all across the North Country because they learned to ski to hunt.
You went to this remote hamlet. Okoram, is that how we say it?
Okoram, yeah.
Okoram, yep. Mountains in northwestern China, Central Asia, really. We're lucky enough to witness people using the age-old process of making skis. Can you tell us about the process?
Sure. It was extraordinarily simple in some ways. I mean, they all carry an axe, and they just ski out. You've got probably 5 feet of powder. It's incredibly light snow. It's champagne powder. This is a continental climate, so there's very little precipitation. Ski out, find a tree, a red spruce. They'll spend all morning looking for the straightest tree with the straightest grain. They'll cut it down. They'll make a chunk that's about 7 feet long. They'll split that in half. It's so cold, it's usually 20 to 40 below zero every day, that they just score the trunk down the middle, and with a swing of the axe, they split the tree in half. And then they basically axe it down to these two kind of look 2x4 looking things. They carry it back to their shed, their horse barn, and then they whittle it down with an axe, put it in a pot to bend, to heat up the tips and bend them, put the bent tips in a jig, hold it for about 10 days like that, and then they nail horsehair the full length of the bottom of the ski, so it glides forward very easily, but catches. It's kind of like the fur of a cat, you know, if you run your hand one way, if you run your hand the other way. And that's how they're able to climb up and down mountains so easily. They don't use wax on the bottom. It's horsehair.
How about the technique of actually operating the skis? One pole, you use kind of like a rudder. How do they do that? How fast can you go, and how much control would you have?
That's a good question. They have far more control than you would imagine. Now, the problem, again, is that the snow is so light that I was on telemark skis, and I had this standard two-pole system. And even with a fairly large basket, for those in New Hampshire, you call a powder basket on the end of your pole, it would sink straight down to your hands in the snow. The tayak, or the pole that they have, is about 6 to 8 feet long. So they use that to push themselves forward, and when they're going downhill, they use it as a rudder. They put it kind of along the side and drop the tail in with their hands, and that's the way they're able to turn. Now, the bindings are incredibly simple. They are just an X strap of leather, and there's four holes drilled into the ski, and then they have leather straps coming up, and they just put a snow boot in there. So they're not tight, and your heel can slide off very easily. So it takes a lot of skill. I got on these skis and tried to do what they can do, and obviously I need several generations of practice to be able to do it. They even jump these skis.
There's a chart here of comparing different skis from different eras. These look, I guess, a little shorter, a little thicker, maybe more like telemark skis. The people that live in this region also have an interesting lineage, a kind of mix, almost stuck in the middle of several different countries and cultures. Can you tell us a little bit about the people who live there?
Sure. Although we were in China, the tribes people we were with are Tuvans, and they feel like they're direct descendants of Genghis Khan. In fact, when you go into everyone's home, there's a not a portrait, obviously, a picture of Genghis Khan, and they even shave the kid's head with just this little black tuft of hair. So they see themselves as descendants of Genghis Khan. They are a Siberian / Mongolian people, largely pastoralists. They raise horses and they eat horses. And during the winter, they hunt on skis. They hunt elk.
Which language do they speak?
They speak Tuvan, which is this kind of, it's actually a variation of Turkish, which is remarkable.
Like the throat singers, the Tuvan throat singers?
That's right. That's right. These are the same people, the throat singers. I tried to get some of them, when we were out on this long, multiple-day elk hunt, I tried to get some of them to throat sing, and they couldn't do it, but they did put on some Tuvan rap for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, you have to imagine the scene here, because the snow is about 5 feet deep, and what they've done is they've cut down actual trees and drag them down. These are dead trees, obviously, and made a bonfire that would make the Boy Scouts proud. I mean, it burned a hole 4 feet down to the ground. And so we're kind of in this enclosed wall, the snow melting, and they're singing songs, and then suddenly they get kind of bored with their traditional songs and just put on a smartphone with a couple of little speakers. And now we're skiing. We just crossed elk tracks. We've crossed wolf tracks. And these guys are incredibly tough. I mean, they just put an army blanket over them and slept through the night. They all pile in one pile, and it was literally 40 below. I had my Everest sleeping bag with me.
Wow. Tell us about that hunt, which was actually more of a trekking expedition, because I guess hunting is really restricted in China.
Hunting's illegal and owning a firearm is illegal, but that doesn't really matter because they have a different tradition there.
Huh.
We set out, half dozen of us. We crossed elk tracks several times, and on the third day, we actually came in contact with two bulls, which obviously ran off, and so we tracked those bulls. Now, when they got close enough, they saw them down in the valley. They just jump onto their skis and go straight down. I mean, none of this big slalom turns and things like that. They basically ski, 30 miles an hour straight down. And the amazing part is they're going to lasso these elk.
So what? While they're on the skis?
On the skis. You're skiing down, and they've got a rawhide lasso. Imagine this. This is a cowboy skier, right? And this loop in the lasso has to go over the antlers of an elk. So it's about 6 to 8 feet wide, the loop, and they're screaming. Then they fall backwards and catch the elk, and their skis are perpendicular to the elk. And, of course, the elk, remember, it's such light snow that the elk are almost already swimming.
Mm-hmm.
They're swimming in the snow, and they start to fight. They struggle against the rope. The skiers, the Tuvan skiers, are actually kind of just dragged through the snow, and this will go on for 2 or 3 hours until the elk is exhausted. It's kind of old men in the sea sort of thing.
What a scene.
It's fantastic, yeah. And it's been going on for thousands of years. No matter what you believe, where the oldest skiing and ski culture is, it's certainly 3,000 to 4,000 years old, the same technique. But they can't kill the animals. So they actually took myself and the photographer out just to show them that they still had all these skills and they still could do this.
Well, you and the photographer were there. Do you think if you hadn't been there, they would have killed the elk?
Yeah, it's hard to question. I think they may have, although they have a very successful herd of horses, and they eat horse meat all the time. That's what we survived on, was horse meat. So I don't know if they need the meat that much, but they love the hunt.
I think, Mark, many of us have seen those photographs of mountains, glacial basins, where snow and ice has receded, ascribed to climate change.
Right.
Has that changed snow levels or anything about the lifestyle of the people that you saw?
It has. The Altai, like all places, I was on Everest last year, it's also lost an enormous amount of snow. Same here. This is the first time in the last 4 years that they've been able to ski well enough to actually track elk. Formerly, 50 years ago, I interviewed a lot of the old guys who were 75, 80. You know, every winter there was 5, 6, 7 feet of snow. So the elk are kind of stranded. They're just, cutting troughs. And so hunting elk was not that difficult. Now, unless you have a heavy snow year, you can't hunt them at all because they'll just leave.
Mark Jenkins, contributing writer for National Geographic, he wrote the article on the trail with the first skiers for this month's issue. You'll find a link to read the article and see a slideshow of some of the spectacular photos, including those of a lassoed elk. There's also video of the skiers in action. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Mark, thanks again.
My pleasure, Virginia.
Coming up, a modern magician conjures a 19th century illusionist. My word of mouth continues.